How's it going? And welcome back to On the Wire, proud member of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On the Wire Pod. And of course, if you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe, and as always, I am joined by the 2020 TGFBI champion, Kevin Haston. Kevin, I heard you had a chance to see Bobby Witt Jr. and others earlier this week. How'd that go?
Oh, it was awesome. The best part about it was being at the ballpark for the first time in almost 2 years. It was great. Had my 10-year-old daughter with me. We had a great time. A buddy went as well. Another buddy that lives in the area ended up joining us. So it was stuff we haven't got to do for a long time. And we got to watch some great baseball while we were there.
Where was that? Because it wasn't in Northwest Arkansas.
It was in Frisco, Texas, which is a suburb of the Dallas-Fort Worth area near Grapevine. And the Frisco Rough Riders, which are the AA affiliate of the Rangers.
Okay. And you didn't actually hit the game where Witt had the home run and the triple or home run turn triple, did you? Were you?
No, that was the night before. And I was a little upset because I was like, oh, now we probably blew it. Now he's going to strike out three times. And what was really cool was he did strike out once. He also drew a walk. He looked really good. The plate discipline that we've been hearing from going back to the alternate site last year for him, it looked much better than what we had originally been told it might be. And he did have a couple of really nice cuts, got on base a couple of times. Melendez hit a bomb. That was sweet. MJ Melendez, who was another one of the Royals' top prospects on that team. Nick Prado had a good game as well. So yeah, it was a great time.
Awesome. I can't wait. Me and my family are going to, of all places, Charleston, South Carolina in July. And so I am hoping to hit up a low A game there.
River Dogs.
Yeah. Charleston River Dogs. So Tampa Bay. And they'll be playing that while we're there. They're playing the Atlanta Augusta Green Jackets, I think, is the team they're playing. And so got to hit up some of our prospect guys over at Shelley Verstrait. Let me know a couple guys to keep an eye out for over on those two rosters. Hopefully those rosters are still intact by the time we roll out there. Nobody gets none of the good players getting any promotions, or who knows, you might see some guys move from extended spring training over to low A. We'll see. But let's get right to it. We're really lucky, extremely lucky to have with us Lucas Beery this week to break down our fab options. Lucas can regularly be heard hosting the LouCast Baseball podcast through the Sports Crew Radio Network and can be seen writing regularly for fantasysportsdegens.com. You can find a link to both of those in this episode's show description, so make sure to check them both out as soon as you can if you haven't already, or continue to do so. Lucas can also be found on the Twitter at LucasBeery33. And I'm extremely excited to have with us another fantasy analyst based out of Indiana, which I feel is a very rare breed. So, Lucas, thanks for joining us. How's your season been going so far?
Well, first off, I just want to thank you guys again for having me. I was telling Adam this before we started recording, but it's nice to have a waiver wire show that's long form, where you really get into the options, break them down over the balance of an hour to 90 minutes. So that's cool. But the season's been going really well, actually. TGFBI has been good. I'm in first place there and doing decent in the overall. And we've got a couple of draft champions over on the NFBC that are top two in the league. So that's good. Doing okay in a few Fantrax draft and holds and rebuilding a few dynasties. That's fun, but sucks when you know you're not going to win any money. But yeah, it's been pretty good so far.
Yeah, we joke about it, and I still ask for those who listen to on a regular basis, because it is such a long form. Lucas, do you listen to us when you listen to us? If you listen to us, do you listen to us on 1.5 speed, or do you listen to us at normal speed?
So I actually started doing different from normal speed last summer. I started doing 1.4 times speed. I heard Bill Simmons on his podcast say it sounds like people had a good cup of coffee. And I'll be honest, I listen to almost as many fantasy baseball podcasts as anybody out there this side of Yancey Eaton, but it just lets me get through them. Sometimes I hear the same thoughts, but a lot of the times, even on different shows, whether it's you guys or FTN Network, even RotoWire, you name it. There's different variations and different thoughts that have been thrown in. So I like just listening to as many pods as I can. And I just like kind of hearing different personalities, stuff like that.
Oh, absolutely. No, I'm not opposed to the 1.5 or 1.4 speed. I haven't heard that. I like that.
Yeah. It's a little bit better for me, but yeah.
Yeah. I'm not opposed to it. I listen to plenty at that speed as well. I mowed my lawn today and I got in a good 4 podcasts and just the fact that I was able to listen at 1.5 speed. So that was good. All right, let's get right into it. We're going to get into our news and notes section, of course, to start us off. As always, try to kick off some news and notes that might affect your fab considerations for this coming Sunday. So if we miss anything, we apologize, but you can listen to one of those other fabulous podcasts that Lucas was talking about. So Kevin, I'm going to start off with you. Travis Shaw is out for a while with a dislocated shoulder, which was an ugly scene. He was transferred to the 60-day IL by the Brewers today. As has been customary to talk about the Brewers lineup changes on the show, both the outfield and the infield, I ask you again, what changes do you see in Milwaukee moving forward due to Shaw's absence?
His name has come up when we've been talking about the Brewers. It seems like almost weekly for at least a month now, but over the past couple of days, Daniel Vogelbach no longer playing 3 to 4 times a week. Looks like he's going to play every day. I was shocked to see he was still only 10% rostered in TGFBI. I thought it would have been much higher. The 2% Yahoo, that's even low. I mean, it makes sense that it's lower than the 15 team leagues, but I thought his rostership would have been higher. For the month of June, he's slashing 308, 419, 731 with 3 home runs, 4 RBI, 7 runs scored. And to top it all off, they go to Coors for 4 games this week.
Yeah, that last part is huge. Make sure everybody realizes that any decent bats that are in Milwaukee are headed to Colorado next week. So that's the big point to keep in mind. Always look at your future schedule moving forward. Lucas, Dylan Moore was returned to the Mariners and started at second base for Seattle today. That's Saturday, as we're recording Saturday night. Does Moore's return impact anyone of note in Seattle, and should we be interested in Moore himself?
I personally don't think it's going to affect anyone of note. Shed Long and Jake Bowers, they are in the mix there at the first base and second base positions separately, but Ty France can allow them to do either one since he bounces around and he's their DH at the moment. But Dylan Moore has shown far more than really any of those guys, including France. But I think France and Moore will continue to play. And if Moore was dropped in any league, I personally would not have drafted him given the horrible plate discipline. But if he's available on the wire, guys with his power and speed shouldn't be. So I would make that change this weekend if he was somehow dropped in a 12-teamer or even a 10-teamer.
All right, Kevin, over in San Diego, Trent Grisham has returned to the Padres lineup. Who does he kick out of the lineup, assuming he stays healthy enough to play every day?
It's interesting in San Diego, and until a couple of weeks ago, I wouldn't have thought this is the possibility, but Profar is 0-for since June 3rd, and as much as we've talked about Profar at different points this season being someone to look at adding, especially with the bases he was been stealing throughout the season, he's probably going to get a day or two of rest, I would think. And then if they start bringing him back, I don't think he's going to lose his job. But with Cronenworth, Kim, Myers, I think it becomes a share with all these guys, and they'll all lose a few plate appearances.
Yeah, I would have to agree completely there with Kevin. And Lou and I, we were talking earlier this week, and we're talking about Joey Gallo being another guy that San Diego is interested in. And I was mentioning to him, they're like the Dodgers. They are not afraid to have 2 or even 3 really talented players coming in off the bench so they can mix and match and make the most of their players and just have plenty of extra depth. So it's tough for us fantasy guys, but certainly good for the Padres if they want to have a great chance to win as many games as possible.
All right, Lucas. Mitch Keller was optioned to AAA Indianapolis by the Pirates. As a fellow Indiana-based guy, do you have any interest in heading to a game in Indianapolis to check him out? And might you have any interest in Will Crow, who presumably is taking Keller's rotation spot up in Pittsburgh? I had to get an Indianapolis note in here somehow. So yeah, go ahead. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I have not been to an Indianapolis Indians game in a while. I really would rather try to go to a high A, minor league, or even double A just to see that more exciting talent. But maybe one day this summer I could. Unfortunately, I'm nowhere near any of those affiliates. I'm more triple A. Louisville is south of me, and triple A Indy is near north of me. Some more kind of the older veteran minor league guys. But as far as Keller, not particularly a huge fan. And Will Crow, I have tried to talk myself into him looking at his profile, but I'm not really excited about him either. But one guy I am excited about is Miguel Yajure. Might have butchered his name there, but he came over in the Jameson Taillon trade. Really interesting pitcher there to just keep a speculative eye on your deeper dynasty leagues.
I like that call as well. Yeah, I prefer driving all the way up to Fort Wayne.
Yeah.
And seeing the Padres low A team. I got to see Wander Franco there a couple years ago when he was with Bowling Green. So I prefer going up there as well, even though I live in Indianapolis and obviously the Indians are right in my backyard. But that's neither here nor there at this moment. All right, Kevin, we'll move to Miami. The Marlins injuries just keep piling up, especially in the rotation. Trevor Rogers hit the IL. So he'll miss however many days. We talked about the Marlins options or lack thereof last week with Eliza Hernandez and Cody Petit going down. Has anything changed in Miami with the loss of Rogers?
Hopefully he's back on Tuesday. It sounds like this might have been vaccine related and they're hoping he can make his start on Tuesday. It's interesting. They have Braxton Garrett lined up to start again. I believe he started on Wednesday. He's lined up to start again on Monday, which would typically give us a two-start week, but there is talk that Poteet may be back next weekend. I haven't seen anything confirmed on that. In fact, most of the official notes we see out there haven't been updated since telling us that he did throw lightly on Tuesday. It being a knee issue, I'm certain that what's going forward has a lot to do with what happened Tuesday. And I haven't heard anything other than he threw lightly. So Braxton Garrett, if Poteet doesn't come back, is lined up for a two-start week, which is interesting. And they're building him up. He had three innings against the Dodgers clear back in May, went back to the minors, and then pitched four innings against Colorado on Wednesday. Performed a little bit better, only the two earned runs rather than the three he had given up before. I think I'm still where I was last week. I don't think I have much interest here, but it's something to keep an eye on, because if Poteet ends up being out longer than they're hoping, if the Trevor Rogers thing turns into something more than they're hoping, it's worth watching, but I don't think I have much interest here.
All right, Lucas, in Washington, Max Scherzer left his Friday start early. He's currently considered day-to-day. If it's more serious and he were to miss any time, even if he were to get his start pushed back a couple of days, is there anyone in Washington worth speculating on to get a spot start or possibly two?
Yeah, I really do try to uncover as many stones as I can and try to be interested in certain guys just in my deeper setups. But similar to the Pirates, this is a pitching rotation with limited depth. If we're going to be as kind as possible, the only guy that I do that's on the fringes there, he has dealing with a broken nose, is Austin Voth. And even him, it's iffy. He's had some intriguing stretches, but obviously he hasn't secured a spot for a reason. It's tough sledding there in Washington.
So you're saying it's Max Scherzer. Didn't Max Scherzer break his nose at the end of last year? So he's like the same. It makes him the same guy. He's just as good.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said.
Yeah. All right. Kevin, the Mets GM, Zach Scott, said that he expects to see Jeff McNeil back for the Mets next weekend and Michael Conforto the weekend after. Who should we expect to see hit the most dropped list next weekend with McNeil and Conforto's impending return?
Nobody, because the guys that are playing aren't rostered. Mason Williams isn't rostered at all in 15-team leagues, TGFBI. Billy McKinney and Luis Guillorme are each just 2% rostered. So one TGFBI team has each of those guys. I think Mason Williams, by the way, has a pretty cool thing. When I looked at his, he's on his fourth Major League Baseball team. He's been playing Major League Baseball for seven consecutive seasons, but never got more than 123 at-bats. And that one season, every other season is 20-something at-bats. But I thought it was pretty cool. And this guy could say, I've been a Major League Baseball player for seven seasons consecutively, even though he's not getting a lot of playing time in any of those seasons. I think the 123 was for Cincinnati, I believe. But it's, these guys aren't rostered, so none of them are going to be on the most dropped. The one question I might have is, if the Mets get everybody healthy, how much playing time is Jonathan Villar going to get? I don't expect to see him on a lot of drop lists until his playing time goes to next to nothing, which may eventually happen, but that's probably what it would take with his stolen base threat.
Yeah, that's a good point there on VR and where he was drafted this year. He was a bench piece, so the fact that he's been able to play a little bit if you needed him, that's been decent. Because my fear with him, I saw some people drafting him and thinking he's going to play maybe 3 to 4 days a week. That's nobody you want near your starting lineups, but he's been able to play a little bit, which has been good. So good point there on VR, Kevin.
All right, Lucas, Kendall Graveman has returned to the Seattle bullpen. He did return today. That's Saturday for the first time since coming back from the IL. Pitched the eighth inning, gave up a home run and a single before getting Jose Ramirez to ground into a double play to end the inning. And he was followed by Rafael Montero in the ninth for the save opportunity. Montero didn't fare much better. Some might say much worse. And he gave, as you gave up, three earned runs on two hits and two walks, blowing the save in the ninth. So my question is Graveman going to be put right into that, right back into that closer role, especially after what happened with Montero today on Saturday? Or do you think Montero has built up enough in the last, I don't know, few days or weeks to make them share that role moving forward?
I think the majority of the chances will go to Graveman, considering the fact that today the manager just feels a lot better about putting him in there to close out the game and seal that win. But you have seen them utilize Montero for saves a handful of times. So I hate always saying it's a committee, but this year that's been my answer more often than not. It's just what I've been seeing. I don't know about you guys, but that's where I'm at. It just feels like most of these clubs are in that committee situation.
I just like seeing Kevin's reaction to that.
Yeah, it's the committees. They're horrible. Fortunately, today might have helped that situation.
Yeah.
Because I think we might have seen a prolonged Graveman first day back going in the eighth, high leverage. Obviously, he's right back in the mix. And we might have saw more of that. But Montero giving up three earned then in the ninth. I would guess that the next opportunity is flip-flopped, and we'll see where it goes from there. Yeah, these committees are painful.
Absolutely. And one guy that I've even picked up in more of a saves hold format, he's been doing well for me. JT Chargois is also another guy to just keep in your mind. I wouldn't even probably watch list him at this point, but he's pitching halfway decently, and you can't necessarily say that about Montero, so I will throw that out there.
It was interesting to see Seattle send Ken Middleton down, or option him down to AAA in the corresponding move to bring Graveman back up, as Middleton did. I think he got at least one, if not multiple saves during Graveman's absence as well. So at least there's less quote unquote competition or less gray area with one less save chance opportunity going to somebody different. All right, Kevin, Nick Madrigal was placed on the 60-day IL with a proximal tear of his right hamstring. And that just sounds terribly painful. And he'll be completely inactive for at least the next 6 weeks. They are contemplating season-ending surgery. It's still on the table. I don't believe, from what I've seen, a decision hasn't been made yet whether to do that or some kind of rehab. What chances are there that, my first question is, what are the chances that Tony La Russa gives Andrew Vaughn a look at second base? Because he seems to be willing to move him to positions non-zero. He's never played before. Non-zero. That's enough. All right. In all seriousness, should we be interested in Danny Mendick, who's been starting at the Keystone for the White Sox since Madrigal went down?
I don't think so. I think he's going to get a lot of the starts on the days that Lurie Garcia is not starting in the outfield. He may get the infield starts there and start second base or move, play shortstop, move some other guys around. But he's 8-for-48 since May 4th. I think it's a couple of home runs that might have had us interested were much earlier in the season, and he just hasn't done anything. He's not even scoring runs. And the White Sox are still scoring runs. That would be the one thing that I would look for. Okay, he's in this nice lineup. If I need some runs scored and I need a bat, but he's not even doing that. So, yeah, I don't have any interest in Mendick at this point.
Lucas, in Cincinnati, TJ Antone hit the IL for the Reds with a right forearm inflammation. Lucas Sims had been doing good things at the end of games for the Reds before his recent hiccup in the sixth inning. I believe that was on Friday. Does the loss of Antone solidify Sims as the logical and perhaps only choice for saves in Cincinnati?
I would say for now, that is the situation we're looking at, because Neer Garrett has been a shell of himself, unfortunately. He seems like a cool guy based on his Twitter personality, Garrett, but he's not given them any competition for Sims. So I think that whenever they do get that save opportunity, I think Sims will be the guy that they give the ball to.
With their 7-run victory today, it did not come. That first opportunity didn't happen on Saturday, that's for sure. And Doolittle did pitch at the end of that game, so not in the mix. Probably tomorrow, late in the game. All right, and then moving on to the Dodgers, which is customary, Kevin. I need to ask you about their lineup changes coming up with Max Muncy likely heading to the IL, according to manager Dave Roberts. Is there anyone that that should shine through next week? And I know I ask you this literally every week.
Every week we got to talk about the Dodgers.
Something's happening.
And my first thought was, yeah, McKinstry's back. He's not doing what he did before his injury. I think he's 2-for-20. Yeah, and he's 2-for-20 going into tonight since in the plate appearances he has gotten. I still like him. I think he'll come out of that. I'm still holding him on my teams. I held him through the injury. I think Matt Beatty is going to get in the lineup more than we've seen in the past. And that was the end of my answer until I went and looked at tonight's lineup. And 30-year-old Andy Burns is starting at second base for the Dodgers tonight. He has 6 career at-bats. They came 5 years ago. But at AAA this season in 30 games, he's hitting .330. 5 home runs, and he's 7-for-8 in stolen base attempts. This is something to keep an eye on over the next couple of days, specifically tonight and tomorrow, because if he is going to get anything close to everyday playing time, it's worth taking a shot on. And tomorrow night, unless he goes bonkers the next couple of days, I'm just looking for playing time today and tomorrow. And if he's getting it, I'm putting bids in on him tomorrow night, because if he does anything this next week, as we know, then the price skyrockets.
Man, that is an interesting call out there with Andy Burns. I will be completely honest. I had never heard of this guy before today. And if the Dodgers...
I hadn't either till I looked at their lineup for tonight.
And the Dodgers picked him up at a free agency this winter. Obviously, they don't do things on accident, so that's a very interesting thing. If he draws the start tomorrow, he's well worth a speculative ad. If he's good enough for the Dodgers and you just maybe need a body to just rent out and see what he does, you could do worse than Burns, since McKinstry is likely picked up. Beatty may or may not be picked up, depending on how competitive the league is, but Burns is assuredly available, I would assume.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is he's actually hitting ahead of McKinstry tonight. They have him in the 7th spot with McKinstry hitting 8th.
All right, Lucas, last thing, I'll leave it at this. Xander Bogaerts has also been missing a couple games, like Muncy, for the Red Sox, with Marwin Gonzalez filling in at shortstop for Boston. Would you feel comfortable plugging Marwin in your starting lineup next week if Xander misses more time?
Sometimes you just need to do stuff like that in a draft and hold if you just need the plate appearances. I'm not a huge fan of Gonzalez, so I would personally try to do a little bit better if I could. Now, if I couldn't, sure, he could be fine, but I guess I'm just not particularly excited to do.
Yeah, we talked about Marwin Gonzalez at the beginning of the season, even the preseason, about how just the even if he's just not wowing you at the plate, the fact that he is eligible at so many different positions allows you to be way more flexible with your bench, especially in an NFBC format. Mm-hmm. But he is, when I say even though he doesn't wow you, he's doing a lot more of the not part recently. I know I've dropped him in a couple of leagues, even with that added flexibility, just because I couldn't stomach putting him in the lineup and knowing he was going to be there for 4 days. And he's also just not playing as often on a regular basis. Now, if he can get on a roll because he's playing at shortstop every single day, even if it's for the first half of next week, maybe he can put something together. I don't know personally that I would trust it, but it's an interesting thing to keep an eye out for. There's no guarantee that Bogaerts will be on the shelf for that much longer either. It doesn't sound as serious as like Muncy's possible IL stint, but something to monitor for sure. All right, that's going to do it for our news section of the pod. As always, we try to keep it focused on news that might affect your FAB considerations for this Sunday, and we may have left out some other important items worth knowing. To stay up to date with all of those news and notes, you should be listening to the Daily First Pitch podcast hosted by Nick Pollock during the week and, of course, Alex Fast Pitch on the weekends. It's 15 minutes full of the most important things that happen in baseball the day before and is a must listen every day to stay up to date with what's going on across the league, including bullpen adjustments, big time hitter performances, and of course, starting pitching spotlights. All right, we'll move on into our focus topic. And Lucas, told, as you were telling me before we're recording or earlier today, you are in 18 different leagues across three different fantasy platforms. Is that right?
Yes.
This year?
Yes, I am a sicko and I have 18 leagues yet.
Yeah. And we talk about, you know, obviously in your dynasty leagues, draft and holds, you're an online championship on NFBC. So a good mix of non-fab and fab leagues of different varieties. So what I want to pick your brain about is how do you manage that? Like, how do you put that together every week? Maybe some of them are daily moves. These, I don't know. You can go into detail on what those leagues might be and how you put that together, whether it's how do you organize yourself? How do you keep yourself from forgetting to place bids? By the way, Kevin, we need to place our bids for the PL Podcast League. That's tonight, Saturday night, our weekly reminder to ourselves to do that. Yeah, Lucas, talk to me about how you keep yourself sane and still make sure you place all your bids and in a organized way that makes sense for each league, because each league, I'm sure, is way different.
Absolutely. So Lou Landers, my podcast host tonight, we do our Saturday show of the Waiver Wire. We're really researching names starting on Thursday, a little bit Friday, email each other the list, and we pretty much know for the most part some of the big names. Now, the nitty-gritty starts really on Sunday for me. The past few weeks, I've tossed in a handful of teams on Saturday in the really deep leagues where things just really aren't going to come up. On Fantrax, I've got a couple of 20-team dynasty leagues, and let me tell you, there's just not a lot out there. If I have a spot that's opened up, sometimes I'll just use James Anderson's prospect list from RotoWire. Just look at that. Maybe throw a name or two from there. But those 20 team leagues, there's really not a lot. So it's 5 to 10 minutes sometimes. Now, I have two teams on Yahoo. One is a $100 pro league. It runs every single night. And I only maybe make a move in there every couple days. Just if I pick up a streamer, then I'll just cut him and backfill it. So that's pretty simple there. So that's all of Yahoo. And then on NFBC, I have my TGFBI and my online championship. Before I even start looking at players to pick up, I follow some tips I've heard from Scott Jenstead. I just pretty much try to set my roster for the next week, see who my cuts are, see who my injury cuts are. I'll have anywhere between 2 to 4, maybe 5 cuts at worst. I had an injury week that happened, and I really just tried to use their software to my advantage. Just copy the bids, change out the drops. If I'm dropping an outfielder, pick up only an outfielder. If I'm dropping a pitcher, pick up a pitcher, and just try to be strategic about it. And I'll throw about 7 to 10 names for each drop just to get somebody in that spot. So the NFBC is the quickest just because their software is immaculate. On the Fantrax side, that's when it takes me a bit of time. I can see Kevin wincing out here. But yeah, on the Fantrax side, like I said, a couple of the deep dynasty leagues, they don't take much because there is not much available. You can't bid on guys that just don't play or are setup men. But some of the 15 teamers are rebuilds as well. So I'm really just sorting by, like, I picked up Garrett Cooper or Jason Hayward just to be able to hopefully sell them off for some draft pick capital. So yeah, the NFBC and the Yahoo are pretty straightforward, but the Fantrax, that's where I'm spending about an hour and a half to 2 hours on Sunday, just going through slowly and carefully and just churning it out a little bit.
That's good. Kevin, actually, you know what, Kevin, I haven't asked you this in a while. How many leagues are you in this season that use FAB?
That use FAB, eight.
Eight. So eight. And the majority of them on NFBC, you have some Fantrax as well, I believe, not in, plus our Yahoo one.
And Fantrax, NFBC, and my three keeper leagues are all on CBS.
Okay. And our Yahoo. So you're juggling four different formats or four platforms. Well, as no, well.
As everybody knows, the Yahoo one isn't being juggled.
You can only handle three balls. Yeah, fourth ball. Sorry. Yeah.
No, and the CBS ones, fortunately, or unfortunately, but for this topic, fortunately, two of them are daily fab, and one is either 3 or 4 days a week. So I don't have to worry about them as much on Sunday. What I do with those on Sundays is just double check that there weren't any new injuries that I wasn't aware of to make sure I'm going to be able, because we do still set our lineups on Monday. As Lucas said, I love NFBC for FAB. They make it as easy as it could possibly be. Fantrax, and I don't dislike Fantrax as much as I hear some others.
Agree with you, Kevin.
As FAB bits. However, it is difficult, and it is easier to make mistakes on Fantrax. So that I spend a little more time double checking everything. I have learned on Fantrax not to just make a drop earlier in the week before I put my FAB bids in, because that makes it easier to do conditional bids if you have the same drop. If you have an open spot and then you put things in the wrong order, it ends up screwing everything up. So I like having the same drop for a few bids, so it works like NFBC does. So that's one little tip, is that if I know I'm going to drop somebody, I don't just do it. I save it until FAB. But for the most part, and then we've talked about my Fantrax leagues are a couple hours after NFBC on Sunday nights. Not only does that give me a little more time, but it gives you a little time to check some things out and adjust your bids if you think you want to.
Yeah, it's always a good topic. Yeah, as far something I like, I'll throw out there is like how, like, when you guys are in a pinch, like how often do you end up making mistakes? Like Kevin, you alluded to, it's easier to make mistakes on Fantrax format. And I asked this question because so Cutline, the NFBC Cutline leagues just ran their second FAB this past Tuesday, and I'm in the Raz Slam. And so I put in all my bids, and I knew I only needed to fill, I didn't have that much. I spent most of my FAB in the first run. So I know I needed to fill about four or five spots. I think there was a catcher and then two other hitters and two other pitchers. So I did, Lucas, what you talked about, you can copy and paste your bid list. And so I made a bid list for one pitcher, and I just copied it over to drop the second pitcher. The problem I ran into is I forgot to change who I would drop in the second, in the copy bid list. And so even though after FAB ran, I realized, hey, I bid more on that guy, on Alex Wood, than the guy who won it. Like, I think I bid like $100 or something like that, and he got him for 80. And I really, I went back and realized, oh, I was dropping the same guy in both lists. So you can't drop a guy that you already dropped for somebody else. So I got Shane McClanahan instead, but I kicked myself because I would have gotten both McClanahan and Alex Wood to fill in my zeros. How often do you guys run into a situation like that? And I'm hoping that's the last time I run into that situation personally. It's the first time, hopefully the last. What do you guys do to, first, how often do you see yourself doing that? Or similar situations. And then what do you do to avoid, like, how do you stay organized in all that FAB, especially if you need to do something like in a pinch? Lucas, I'll turn that over to you first.
I'm going to be honest with you. And I just try to triple check as much as I can. I do my best. I check it and then I check it again. And this is mostly on Mondays, where I go to the RotoWire daily lineups page. I just try to make sure my players are getting in the lineup for sure. And sometimes I just drive myself nuts because I just check it over and over again. And I just want to make sure I'm getting my stats. So honestly, the only thing I can say is just to double, triple check it. And because I just don't want to make, I would be worried that I would cut a stud on accident. And that's another reason I just be extra checking on it. So that's just where I'm at.
Yeah, Lucas made a great point earlier about starts with his cuts and then ensures that he's adding the correct position. Because that is one mistake. I talked about it on the show a couple months ago. I ended up one week with Bobby Witt Jr. as my starting shortstop because I hadn't paid close enough attention to what order my drops were going to be. And then it allowed me to drop the only other starting shortstop I had to make one of my conditional pickups. And so that was a great point to kind of keep it separate by position. And so that's a mistake I won't make it again. And so it's just something else I double check or triple check on, as Lucas said. Same way. I also have gotten to the point where I handwrite my list down and then I make my bids. And then, as you say, Adam, in a pinch, I look at my handwritten sheet to make sure I'm not screwing in something else up when I make that change.
Yeah, that's great. Actually doing it separately off of the program, I've heard a lot of people say that makes a big difference for them, whether you're handwriting it or you've got your own spreadsheets that have your rosters and your bids from previous weeks in there, whatever works separate. That way, when you are editing your actual bids on the Fantrax or on the NFBC platform, you're literally just transcribing. You're just clicking the names. You already know where you're, the names you're looking for. You just, that way you're clicking the right little green tab or plus symbol or whatever different symbol your format uses. So that's good advice as well. All right. I appreciate your guys' insight on that. And hopefully all of our listeners do as well. Fab can be a fickle beast for sure. And as we always say, it's a grind. You're doing this every week. And if you're not doing it every week, typically you're starting to see yourself slip a little bit. There's going to be weeks where your roster is completely fine. And I know in a couple of my 12 teamers, I've not bid anybody. I felt the pressure to like make a bid every week, but no, you guys are doing good. We're just going to let it ride this week.
And add to that point, Adam, I'm not sure if he said it on this pod. I listened to so many pods. Like I said, I heard the great Deadpool Hitter basically saying you can spend $1 to $6 just doing your upgrade, but you could be doing yourself a disservice there while spending money in the process and spending time away from your family. We only have so much time and you're going to spend that time there and you're going to make it so maybe your mind isn't as active come August and September too. Since this is a war of not only statistical and plate appearance attrition, but your mental attrition too. I don't know. It's a balancing act and we're all learning every year, but I thought that was interesting that Rob pointed out sometimes just keeping your roster with what you got can make some sense too.
Over tinkering. Kevin talks about that, especially with when you're specking bullpen pieces a lot. What's the point of picking up a different bullpen piece that's not closing games to replace the guy I already have that's currently not closing games? So that's a good point. Over tinkering can end up being a problem. All right, let's move on into our player recommendation section. Of course, the bulk of the show revolves around who is available out on your waivers and who you should be looking at picking up, depending on what categories you're looking to move up in or focus on, what holes you need to fill, and then who just might be available based on the size of your league, whether they are a 12-teamer, 15-teamer, ALNL only, or even the very shallowest of leagues as well. So let's get right into it. We're going to start with our power category as we do each week. One of these weeks, I'm going to flip it completely and we'll start with pitchers, but that won't be this week. We're going to start with our power category. And I wanted to get your guys' take on the, I don't know if he's rookie eligible. I don't know if he had enough at-bats in his 2019 debut, but Bobby Bradley, I think we touched on him last week, but he is still readily available in TGFBI. He's 22% rostered there, only 6% rostered in Yahoo. He has made quite a little bit of noise since being called up in Cleveland. He's got two home runs already, showing off the power. His slash line in the minors this year was nothing impressive. Sub 200 batting average and not a lot else to go along with it. So are either one of you guys interested in Bobby Bradley? He does seem to be... there's a chance he's on the wrong side of the platoon, which I thought he would end up being the everyday first baseman with Bowers going to or being DFA'd and then ultimately traded to Seattle. Lucas, do you have any thoughts on Bradley as a possible power pickup this coming week?
Yeah, I like Bobby Bradley a little bit. Obviously, I wouldn't go wild to go pick him up in Fab or anything, but I think they're going to give him a shot. He's been a prospect that's been decently well-regarded in their organization for several years now. I don't really see anybody else in that first base corner spot that's going to threaten his playing time. He'll be benched against lefties, I would assume, but we don't have a track record with him that he's a bad hitter as long as maybe a few other guys on the list. So perhaps he could catch a little bit of lightning in a bottle, and more importantly, I think he will have playing time.
Yeah, I correct myself. He'd be on the strong side of the platoon, obviously, as a lefty bat in the middle of that Cleveland order. He has sat against the lefty and a righty since being called up so far, including today on Saturday. Kevin, do you have any thoughts on Bradley and or any other power options that might be available?
I think Bradley's worth a shot as well. It was really interesting after only 49 plate appearances that weren't good in 2019 after he was killing it in the minors. We didn't see him at all in 2020. So that was really interesting. As we've talked about with other prospects, we have no idea what happened. And while it was not going well as far as making contact in AAA so far this season, when he did make contact, he was hitting the ball out of the park. So it's going to be interesting to see how this goes. And he's somebody that throughout the minors has shown a lot of power. I think, on the strong side of the platoon, and we're going to see him for the foreseeable future, hopefully. And hopefully he does well. I think he's worth a shot. But we talked about Vogelbach earlier. He's somebody I'm definitely interested in if I need power. And in some leagues, this may be a week late, but he is still only 63% rostered TGFBI and about 33% Yahoo. And that's Miguel Andujar. His numbers look, if you prorate him out, it's what he did in 2018. He's right on that pace of what he did in 2018. If Miguel Andujar is available in your league, he does need to be grabbed.
Andujar's still available at third base and outfield in Yahoo. I believe he's just outfield in NFBC though, which is different, obviously, from his 2018. Lucas, do you have any opinions on Andujar or anybody else?
Yeah, with Bradley, I was saying some of the other guys in this segment have cemented themselves as not particularly great hitters. I do think Vogelbach could serve a purpose for a lot of 15-team setups. He's going to play, like we established, and he's got big power. Going to screw up your batting average, but most players are going to do that anyways. The fact he has the big powers and the playing time, that's pretty decent. And Duhar, it's been tough seeing his career pan out the way it has. I remember he was a huge asset in dynasty leagues about 2 years ago, and it's just wasted his career away to an extent. But he's been hitting really well lately, and if he is available, I think you're going to have to bid a decent amount of fab to pick him up in those 12-team setups.
To be fair, I think the league average for batting average right now is like in the 230s, and so at Vogelbach's 220, current 224, might not hurt you as much as it would have 2 or 3 years ago. It's still not nice. It's still not good to have. But if you're lucky enough to have built a little bit of a cushion because you have a Michael Brantley type or something like that on your roster, then you might be able to take that hit, especially for a 2 week span that you might have him on your roster. So a good call out there. Well, then we will move on to our speed section. I've got a couple of guys I want to throw at you guys and get your takes on. Three guys that I threw out in my Need for Speed article over at pitcherlist.com. One was a big name pretty much everybody talked about somewhat recently in the last couple of weeks as Taylor Walls in Tampa Bay. He's 81% rostered in TGFBI, 2% rostered in Yahoo. He's playing every day shortstop as expected for Tampa. He's like one of the very few bats in that lineup that you see in there every single day. But the one I'm more interested in is Jake Fraley. Only 20% roster across TGFBI. Clear path to playing time in Seattle with Kyle Lewis on the shelf for the foreseeable future. And of course, Jared Kelenic being demoted, sharing outfield time with Mitch Haniger, obviously, and Taylor Schemmel, rotating in there. And then the kind of little stretch one that I want to throw out there is Daz Cameron, who just got recalled back up for the Tigers, currently completely unrostered in TGFBI and 0% rostered. So I'm just going to say less than 1% rostered across Yahoo as well. Each one of these guys, at least with Cameron and Fraley, have each hit a home run recently. They each stolen bases. Fraley's got, I think, 4 or 5 stolen bases in the last week and a half. Cameron stole a base on the first day up in Detroit. Of these three, Lucas, I'll go to you first. Who do you trust more to get a stolen base this coming week? And then, but on the flip side of that, who do you think is just the best all around player that's going to not hurt you everywhere else of these three?
I think as far as the safest play moving forward for the next 3 to 4 weeks would probably be Taylor Walls. As we mentioned earlier, his defense is going to keep him in the lineup and they're going to roll him out there and see what he can do over the next 3 to 4 weeks and go from there. Now, as far as more of a high risk, high reward play, and the guy who's going to get the steal this week, I would say Jake Fraley. He's got the most clean path to playing time at the moment between him and Daz Cameron. And he's been an on-base machine. He's already got 4 steals this year. That's a big part of his skill set. So that's who I would stream for the steals this week. But I like all three of these options to varying degrees.
Yeah, I agree. Fraley, we briefly touched on him last week talking about the Seattle situation. And I didn't really consider that the stolen bases were going to be the appeal. So that's been really nice to see. One name you don't have here that you did have last week, Adam, that I want to bring up again, because I think a lot of people were down on him due to the 5-game week. Cleveland has 7 games this upcoming week. So Bradley Zimmer didn't get picked up as much as I thought he would. He's only 20% rostered TGFBI. And now that they have a 7-game week, but he didn't steal any bases this week, so people might just forget about him. They might be able to get him on the cheap this week as well.
That's a good call out. Yeah, Cleveland hosts Baltimore for 4 games, and they do travel to Pittsburgh, which is Josh Stallings over there has not been very good at stopping would-be base stealers. So it's a good matchup call up there. I appreciate that. I like Daz Cameron personally. Lucas, to your point, there's no guarantee that he's going to see regular playing time in Detroit, even though it's Detroit. And all three of these guys have 7 game slates coming up next week. So they could each volume their way into more opportunities. But I will echo, I do Jake Fraley the most. I was able to pick him up in a daily moves league last week. On the day, he stole a base. So I was pretty happy about that. Literally, I picked him up for the stolen bases. But Kevin, to your point, like, Fraley's actually not that fast. He's like in the 57th percentile in sprint speed and has been in for a while, but he knows how to steal bases. Like, he has a history of stealing bases throughout the minors, even without the really strong wheels. He has really good matchups against Tampa Bay, Mike Zunino, and Ryan Jeffers in Minnesota, who are both right around the 20% caught stealing mark coming into next week as well. So I like the Fraley pick as well. Lucas, anybody else out there that you think might be able to steal a bag or two with stolen bases being probably in the middle of everybody's league? Stolen bases is probably pretty close. Maybe the team that in your league that has none might not be able to jump up, and the team that's running away with it. But I think stolen bases is typically a category in which you can make a lot of ground if you're in the middle of the pack. Do you see anybody else out there?
One other guy that can be added to your waterfall of conditional bids, if he's available, which I imagine he probably would be, Adam Engel. I probably view him as more of a 10 to 12 steal guy if you're going to give him 150 games or something like that. It is possible he could steal you a base. Obviously, it's not a great, exciting name, but I think Adam Engel could be okay.
always a ringing endorsement for a player when somebody ends with, it could be okay. Yeah. But yeah, that's a good point. We talk about this a lot. It's good to have that waterfall bid.
Yeah.
Yeah. More than one, and place those bids on. And if you're okay with having any of them, you're able to bring down your bid. So if you were going to bid $40 or whatever on Jake Fraley, but you'd be fine with Engel.
Yeah.
You can bring that bid down to $25 and be like, I might not get Fraley, but I'm good with Engel.
That's a very powerful.
Yeah, it's like we talked with, it was when Scott Chu. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Lucas.
Oh, yeah. That's a very powerful tactic. When you're not married to a certain player and you have 5 to 7 guys you're really liking, you're going to do that all season long and you're going to get good prices on your players.
Yeah. It's a lot easier to do that in a 12-teamer, obviously, when your waiver list is way longer. But when you can do it in a 15-teamer or deeper leagues, you should.
Yeah, it was like when Scott Chu was here, Adam, when we were talking about streaming for stolen bases, just like we stream pitchers. We only need one. Mm-hmm. If we get one stolen base the week we're starting that guy, that's a 26 stolen base guy over the season.
And you have to draft those guys. They don't exist on the wire. So, yeah, it's your point. That's a good one. So let's move on to our opportunity section. Guys that just might have just really good opportunities moving forward, whether they're walking into more playing time, maybe they added extra positional flexibility, or you think they're going to in the next couple of days, or they just have really good matchups, maybe a couple doubleheaders or a 7-game stretch with maybe 3 or 4 games in Colorado or in Camden with Baltimore heating up with the summer months approaching. So Lucas, I'll start with you. Any guys out there that you're eyeing just because of the opportunity they have?
I like Lamont Wade a little bit as far as, you get him cheap, hits at the top of the lineup, first base outfield, great OB, good OBP. Let's take that back a notch there. I like him. I love Fraley this week. Problem is everyone else will too, so he's going to be expensive. Not sure if he's going to be in between that $40 to $100 range. Seals are tough, so those are more my top targets. And then, like I said, with Engel, just throw in a whole bunch of other players in there too, just to make sure that you're going to get some playing time if you're dealing with injuries or the like.
That's a good point about, that's another opportunity to look at is lineup changes. We talked about the very beginning of the season, of course, with Michael Curlin, lineup king. And really important to keep an eye on that. It's guys who are moving into the number one spot or after injuries open up that position, who ends up getting that spot and who keeps it. Kevin, I think you got a guy on here that has moved into such a spot. You want to talk about him a little bit?
Yeah, he's nearly universally rostered in 15-team leagues. I think one TGFBI league has him available, but in 12-teamers, Odubel Herrera is readily available on almost 3/4 of the leagues out there. And he's scoring runs due to being at that spot at the top of the lineup that you guys were just talking about. After the 2019 season, I looked at every league I was in and all of the other leagues that I could find results for and saw if there was one category that correlated with the overall standings of leagues, and runs far and away was the, if you're only going to look at one category, and runs is what it was far and away. Now it makes sense. If you hit home runs, you're scoring a run. If you steal bases, you're getting into scoring position. It makes sense, but it just a quick glance, and a lot of times the run category can be hard to catch up in. Odubel Herrera with 16 runs scored in the month he's been playing, that's over 100 pace hitting on top at the top of that nice lineup. He's somebody definitely worth taking a look at.
Yeah, good call up there. I didn't realize he was at the top of the Philadelphia order until I ran one of the batter's box articles I do over at Pitcher List, and he had a good day. I think it was on Thursday, and I looked through his past games. I'm like, he's been at the top of the order for the last 2 weeks. What happened to McCutcheon? And I was like, that's right. I dropped McCutcheon in the one league I had him a while ago.
Decided to start hitting home runs because yes, I benched him this week.
Yep. I noticed that after he got plugged into somebody else's lineup in my head-to-head league. All right, cool. Something I want to just throw out there, everybody keep aware of, check your schedules of all the teams coming up. The Mets have 2 doubleheaders coming up, one this week and one next week, one on Saturday the 19th. and then another one on the 21st, next Monday. Keep an eye on that when you're considering hitters, or if Jeff McNeil is coming back into your lineup. Conforto might not, probably won't be back by then, but according to what GM said, but something to keep an eye on. Obviously, Washington has at least one of those doubleheaders as well. So keep an eye on those, getting those extra at-bats, especially from here on out, can volume your way across different categories. We will move on to wins and Ks and move on to our pitcher categories. And before we get into any recommendations, Kevin, I got to ask you, is there any reason after this week we should still be interested in Jackson Coer?
Probably not for now in redraft leagues. Unfortunately, I'm guessing he's going to suffer the same fate that Daniel Lynch did, performing similarly a few weeks ago. The bright side of this is, in both instances and in another appearance or two, Ronald Bolanos coming in relief has looked really good. Now, the Royals do not need, he went 3.3 1/3 innings today. Doesn't appear like the Royals may be in need of a fifth starter for about a week and a half or 2 weeks. So if they do want to try to stretch him out a little bit and get him ready for that situation, he's somebody I might speculate on. His stuff has looked really good, and he's handled the pressure, if nothing else, better than both Lynch and Kohar have in the last couple of weeks. So that's somebody I might keep an eye on, but I'm guessing Kohar is going to go join Daniel Lynch back at AAA.
That really stings me. I'm going to be honest with you, Kevin. I am in a Fantrax redraft. I did get Jackson Coer last week, and I spent a pretty penny on him. I dropped $126 fab dollars on him last Sunday, and because I was chasing volume, I used the 2-start week. That stung, but yeah.
Yes, sometimes you just got to chase the volume, though. And I grabbed Coer in my hot new league, and right away I plugged him right in. The bidding ended like on Sunday, so I was able to plug him into my Monday lineup. So I got both of those starts, so that's fun. You live and you learn. And luckily, there's obviously keeper aspects in a not new league. I didn't bid too much money on him, so there's a chance I hold on to him. Maybe not. We'll see. Free agency works a little differently, obviously, on the not new format.
I'm going to hold my Jackson Coer share in that setup at least for one more week. Like Kevin said, if they send him down to AAA, I'm going to be done with him. But if they don't, I'll just watch from the bench, just because we loved this guy last week. Sure, he got blown to bits this week, but are we really going to change our mind over that? It factors in some, but I don't all of a sudden think he's a horrible pitcher. So I'm going to at least hang on to him and see what happens for maybe one more week, unless we get news he's demoted.
Yeah, I think it's a good point.
Sure, wait until that's official.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you should probably feel about him the same way that the Royals do. If the Royals are demoting him, then it's probably safe. All right, well, let's see. Lucas, any other actual starters that you're actually hoping to get this week in Fab that you think may work out a little bit better than Coer did for you this past week?
Yeah, one other guy that I do quite a bit is San Francisco Giants pitcher Sammy Long. He's got some really interesting strikeout stuff. AAA this year, he was just striking everybody in the world, and I actually noticed him the day before he got his follower start this week. He was one of the top search guys on Fangraphs, and I'd never even heard of him. I play in six dynasty leagues, so that surprised me. I was like, who's this guy? And looked into him. The next day, he got promoted as a follower and struck out a bunch of dudes. So he's going to be expensive. James Anderson bumped him up on his prospect list almost to top 100 status, and he was a relative unknown. He missed a year of baseball in 2018 just because I don't think he had an opportunity available to him. And the next thing, he's a huge waiver wire ad this week. So I like Sammy Long for the San Francisco Giants.
That's a good call out there. Kevin, any other starters that you got your eye on, whether they volume plays for double starts or just anybody who think you have a good matchup coming up that might get you a win?
Yeah, I didn't actually realize that Vladimir Gutierrez is in line for a couple of starts this week. I was interested anyway, and then I was like, oh, he gets 2 starts. So it's at Milwaukee, which isn't the best matchup, but his best outing thus far this season just came against Milwaukee with 7 strikeouts going 7 innings. That's what I like the most, that's 7 innings. And then he does go to San Diego as well. So it's tough. Could be tough matchups, but he's been pitching well. I think I'll use him. I have a couple of leagues where I'm hurting for depth starting pitching. And I'll throw him out there. He's still only 5% rostered TGFBI. You know, we all know about Kyle Bodey and the development staff in Cincinnati. Gutierrez has looked good. He got two wins, 2.65 ERA. I'm going to give him a shot. It's risky. It's risky. But in places where I need the depth, I'll roll with it.
Yeah, I agree that pitching in Milwaukee is never something you really want to be doing. But at least the Brewers strike out plenty. And right. They are Travis Shawless now as well. Maybe Vogelbach gets a dinger off of him, but the rest of the lineup is hurting, as in Colton Wong still out as well. All right, we're going to move forward in time. I'm going to scroll down to our looking ahead section and just talk about some more volume plays. These are guys that may have or are currently slated or expected to get two starts the week of June 15th. So that's not this coming week, obviously. It's next week. And so you guys see that list in front of you. Lucas, start with you. Give me, it's a short list this week. There's a lot of aces that are currently slated to go for two starts in this week. And so there's about 9 or 10 guys here on this list that are all 50% rostered across Yahoo or less. So if anybody crossed that 50% rostered mark, I didn't bother putting them on the list. So of these guys, Lucas, who do you like to bid on this week, and whether you hold them on your bench for their single start or maybe they have a good enough matchup that you want to plug them in for. But at the very least, you're holding them so that you can plug them in for their probable two start on the week of the 15th. Who do you like? And then give me a fade after that.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and just take the easy name here. Tarik Skubal. He's been pitching really well. Seems like some people may be asleep at the wheel on that one if he's available. I know he's been tough in the beginning of his career. Started out really rocky despite huge expectations, but he's been getting a lot of strikeouts lately. Very interesting pitcher as well. And then another guy that I would pick up as well. I probably wouldn't start him this week unless you were truly in desperation mode, but this guy's been a lot better. Ross Stripling. He's shown the highest upside, in my opinion, of any pitcher here on this list when he's right. That was with Los Angeles. Never been a big velocity guy. So I think as he gets further into his early 30s, that even though he's not going to have big velocity, he never had it. So I do Stripling, as I think he could recapture form in Toronto.
All right, Kevin, we'll go to you. Is there any you want to double down on any of the names that Lucas just mentioned, or is there somebody else that stands out to you?
I definitely agree with Skubal, if Skubal is available. I'm going with the Royal here, and it's matchups. Two out of the three. Mike Minor, he's got 6 outings this season where he's given up 4 earned runs or more, but he's coming off of his best outing of the season, and he gets the Tigers this week. And then in the 2 starts next week, he gets the Texas Rangers. And it's hot down here now. 100 degrees every day for the past week. We did have a nice prolonged cooler than normal, later than normal spring. Excuse me. Everything was pretty shocking, actually, but we're to our typical every day. It's 100 degrees. So the roof will be closed. And last season, that ballpark was much more pitcher friendly when the roof was closed, the Globe Life there. So 2 great matchups. With the at New York thrown in there, that one will be a little nerve-wracking, to say the least. But the Yankees lineup, every time they show us flashes that, okay, here's the Yankees, they seem to just stop producing runs again. I believe last weekend, and I haven't updated this number, but when I wrote my article last Sunday morning, the Yankees led Major League Baseball in games scoring 3 runs or less. So they're not the big worry we typically think they are. So I'll go with Mike Minor here, Detroit at the Yankees and at Texas for the 2 starts next week.
All right. Good call out there. I want to just bring to light, Johan Oviedo has some really tempting matchups coming up. Yes. He's versus Miami this week, and then he travels to Detroit. So it's an AL park. He's going to get an extra hitter in there, but then he will host in St. Louis. He'll host the Pirates. So Miami, Detroit, Pittsburgh back to back. He hasn't gone over 4 1/3 innings so far in a major league start. He has been jumping back and forth between the minors and the majors, spot starting here, spot starting there. It looks as though he'll have a couple of straight starts, obviously with Flaherty out and a need in that rotation moving forward. Based on matchups, if he can jump over that 5-inning mark for at least, you know, one or two of those, those matchups are really, really tempting for sure. And then I don't think I'd be picking him up, and I'm curious to see what you guys think. So Baltimore has 3 straight weeks coming up with 7-game slates. They don't have an off day until July 5th. And so it looks as though Jorge Lopez is slated to travel to Cleveland this week. Then next week, he would face off in Baltimore against Houston and then travel to Buffalo to face the Blue Jays. Is that enough volume for you to be interested in somebody like that, who obviously isn't a big name commodity, maybe not somebody you trust on a single start week with an average team that he's facing? But because of the volume play, is this something worth looking into? Lucas, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Jorge Lopez has been tough for me to figure out this year. I've stacked against him in DFS numerous times, and they have not worked out very well. Granted, I don't trust him enough to necessarily use him in most of my teams, but if I am chasing, or if it's a DC format where I've only got so many options, I'm going to chase that 2-start week and hope to get lucky. Yeah, I could get my ratios blown to pieces, but sometimes you've got to take some risks. And if you're chasing, I could use Jorge Lopez in certain desperation setups.
I agree with everything Lucas said, except I can't do it with Jorge Lopez. As a Royals fan, I just saw how bad he can be. And I've heard Eno Saris has talked for years now about how good Jorge Lopez should be. And then he goes out when Lucas is stacking against him and shows us glimpses of that. And we get a little excited, like maybe it's here. And then he goes back to old Jorge Lopez. I just can't do it.
Yeah, his last 4 starts, he struck out 8 Nationals, 3 Twins, and then 7 Twins. And then he did face off against Cleveland most recently, only struck out 2, walked 3. So he is back and forth in that area. It's just tough with the 4 starts in 2 weeks to be able to volume your way, no matter if one of those two ends up being 7 strikeouts or more.
Did you guys see Brett Phillips act like he was going to charge him to their former teammates when they were in Kansas City? I think the guy that the most worried was the home plate umpire. But yeah, Jorge Lopez hit Brett Phillips, and Brett Phillips pointed at him and pointed at his own chest and took a couple steps and then started laughing. The umpire was behind him and couldn't see him laughing, and he's running out, getting between them. It's pretty funny. Look that up.
That's good stuff. I love everything to do with Brett Phillips. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Like I said, this list is pretty low. So I'm just going to read off these names for our listeners to look into on their own. Again, these are guys who are set to make 2 starts the week of June 15th. Bid on them now. Get them a little cheaper this week. Stash them if you can. Mike Minor, Cole Irvin of Oakland, Tarik Skubal of Detroit, Keegan Aiken of Baltimore, and then Jorge Lopez, obviously, of Baltimore as well. Ross Stripling of the Buffalo Blue Jays, Johan Oviedo of the Cardinals, Merrill Kelly, and J.A. Happ rounding out that list. So obviously a lot of other guys are going to get 2 starts that week. But like I said, majority of them, if not all of them, are 50% rostered in Yahoo or more. So look into those if you're in shallow formats. But those are the names to look at in the majority of leagues moving forward. So we'll move forward into our ratio section. Typically, these will be relievers that you think can chip away at your ERA and your WHIP. They can be starters as well. Maybe guys that you don't expect to get a lot of strikeouts, or maybe not even wins, maybe just long men. Kevin, I'll start with you. Are there any guys that kind of fit that bill for you for this coming week?
Yeah, I know we brought him up on a show, but I think it was when Toby was here, when we didn't know who the Brewers starter was going to be. And I've always been a fan of Brent Suter of Milwaukee. He has had a couple of outings where he's given up some runs recently, but what is amazing to me is the 7 wins. Now, it's probably not smart to go chasing wins from a reliever, but it's interesting that it appears he's put in these situations intentionally by the Brewers. He had 8 wins back in 2018. He had 4 wins and only 18 innings pitched in 2019. He had a couple in the shortened season last year and up to 7 this season. It's 4 consecutive seasons. It just seems that he's put into this position by the Brewers, whether he's their guy in a tie game and down one run. That's probably the likely scenario, would be my guess. But I've always been a fan of his anyway. I like the way he pitches. So he's, you know, we've been talking about relievers each week. Some of these guys that may stumble into a save or two now and then and some wins, and Suter's just another one to add to the list.
Yeah, I think it's a good call up there. Only thing to keep an eye on is the fact that, like we talked about with Vogelbach, of course, Milwaukee does travel to Colorado next week for a 4-game stretch. But then they host Colorado the week after that.
That's always nice.
Yeah. Hosting Colorado in your home park, even if it's Milwaukee, is always a good thing. Anybody else catch your eye, Lucas, in the category of being able to chip away at your pitching ratios?
I don't have a name necessarily, but what I do to try to find these guys is that I'll really just go on my last 14 days and I'll just look for the best K to BB rates. Now, sometimes you do get more mop-up men in there, but if you watch games on a regular basis, you'll be able to know roles to a degree. And you can even use Greg Jewett's closer chart. That's a wonderful resource. Hit him up on Twitter if you're not doing so already. But since every league's a little different, some leagues you might have a Scott Barlow available, and that'd be a perfect name. But since it's tough to give a general name, I usually just, my method is going off of K to BB over the last even 30 days or 14 days. Then that way you'll be able to see who's hot lately and who's keeping base runners off base and who's getting the strikeouts.
Nice. Good general advice there. Yeah, this category is easily the most difficult, I think, to get off the wire and feel like you feel confident after you ended up picking a guy that's going to do this for you the following week, especially if you're in the rare situation that your rotation's actually not completely injured and you have to squeeze one of these guys in just to chip away your ratios. You feel bad benching one of your starters that obviously could go more than 5 innings and, you know, get the other categories as well. And then, of course, we will end this little section of the pitching section with everybody's favorite category, and that is saves. We talked about the Cincinnati situation a little bit earlier, and of course, the Seattle situation earlier. Kevin, are there any situations of note to talk about that are worth either speculating on, or do you see a move imminent in any of the bullpens as you've been watching?
I got curious after Chapman gave it up for the Yankees again today. And so I started looking back, and he's only got 1 save since May 20th. He's given up runs in 3 of his last 7 appearances. So I went and looked at his velocity, and indeed it is down. He was throwing 96, 97 with his 4-seam. We know earlier this season he was hitting triple digits with that pitch, and he has throughout his career. He hasn't hit triple digits since June 2nd. I'm not saying he's hurt. I'm saying I'm picking up Zach Britton just in case he is.
Yeah, I heard Sarah's talking about that on Rate and Barrels, listening to that pod while I was mowing the lawn. And he mentioned as well, Chapman's RPMs were down significantly in his last appearance as well. But with the speed of his pitches going down in conjunction with that, who knows if it's a sticky stuff situation or just him being injured or just not having what he normally has. So it's a good watch list for sure. If not, Britton's not going to hurt you. Exactly. Britton just turns into the guy that's going to chip away your ERA and your whip throughout the course of the week. So good flyer there as well. Lucas, any other situations worth monitoring or that you are personally monitoring?
Yeah, I'll be honest. We mentioned this earlier, but there's about 6 or 7 teams where I'm just taking my hands and throwing them up in the air. Like Detroit is tough. I've had a little bit of Stefan Crichton in draft and hold setups, and I want to just drop him even though I can't in those. But like I said, I hate not trying to use the same answer again, but if you have Greg Jewett's list available and you take a look, and if there's a few of those guys available that are either next man up or something along those lines, and it's a shaky situation, you feel good, like a Jose Cisnero, could be one, or even like Kevin said with Britton, that's another good one too. If he can show that he's healthy again coming off the IL, that's another great name to throw a dollar on if you need to have another guy to just stash away.
Yeah, Cisnero just took the loss on Friday for Detroit. So I know he was a decent add this past weekend in Fab across different leagues, especially 15 teamers in the main event and a little bit of TGFBI. Yeah, situations are interesting. Scott Barlow took the loss for Kansas City on Friday as well. Staumont hasn't really been given an opportunity. Not that Kansas City has been provided any opportunities anyway. So yeah, situations to monitor. Greg does a great job, obviously, with his. I'm going to go ahead and give a shout out to our own bullpen chart as well over at pitcherlist.com. And it's not because I write that column 2 times a week. It's just because it's a very good column. But Rick Graham over at PitcherList does a fantastic job of just daily tweeting, at the very least tweeting out updates on relievers of note, whether they did good or bad. So shout out to Rick Graham. We had him on the show in the preseason talking about this very topic. It is definitely his area of expertise. And make sure you're following him. I believe it's at I Am Rick Graham. And of course, he does the Sunday version of our bullpen depth charts as well. All right, so we will move away from the bullpens because nobody wants to spend any more time in the bullpen than we absolutely have to. And we'll go right into our wild card. And we've been mixing in the wild card section with our prospect stash and section. And so I'll go to both of you guys. Lucas, I'll start with you. Just give me a player that we haven't talked about for whatever reason, maybe doesn't fit into any one of these particular categories, that's worth placing a bid on and being pretty happy that you're going to get them either for this week or as a stash for the future.
Yeah. So one guy that I don't have huge hopes for per se, but I think if you're going to rent a player out this week on the hitting side that could have a little bit of impact for you, and you'll hopefully know within about 1 or 2 weeks, is Jason Vossler from the San Francisco Giants. He swung a pretty decent bat. Wouldn't have huge expectations, but if you throw a dollar on him, I think you have a decent chance of getting him. Some people are more $2 just so they don't get snaked out for a dollar. I know you're that way, Adam. You'd rather just throw two just to ensure you get him in case someone else puts one. But I do Jason Vossler. There's a little bit of opportunity in San Francisco.
Yeah, Vossler is somebody we talked about, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, with the Brandon Belt injury at the time. And so that's a nice reliving that name as well. And obviously he's been doing some things. Kevin, what wild card you got to throw out there for this week?
I'm kind of merging or jumping ahead or a combination of the two, but I'm obviously not NFBC, but in other leagues where we can pick up prospects ahead of time, I'm thinking the Braves are getting close on Drew Waters. Probably not going to hit for the power that, at least right away, that some thought he might a couple of years back, but they need outfield help and he can steal bases. So I have grabbed him in a 12-team league or two where I have an open spot.
That was actually my other name, Kevin, was Drew Waters. I'm not even kidding. The reason I threw out Vossler is I personally like some of the guys that you just know whether or not they're going to be worth keeping. I love Waters. I actually traded for him in Dynasty League. Unfortunately, I gave up Casey Mize for him, and that looking back sucks. But yeah, I like Waters for sure.
It's nice. And then a couple other prospects we talked about in the past, like Jaron Duran or even Tristan Casas of Boston. We're playing a little bit longer since the U.S. made the Olympics after winning their play-in games or their tournament. So congratulations to Team USA for representing us in the Olympics moving forward. So if you were looking at stashing a couple of those players, I did see Duran being dropped like a bad habit for the last 2 weeks across.
Yeah, that means at least mid-August.
Yeah. So definitely check out that roster if you haven't already, including the other teams that are in there. There's some decent prospects that are on some of those rosters, like we talked about a couple of weeks ago, Kevin mentioned. And yeah, like Kevin just said, you're not going to see them up until at the very least when the Olympics are over. But I would guess the majority of them are going back to either AA or AAA when the Olympics are over to get back in the groove of things before being considered.
I completely forgot, Adam, with prospects, a lot of teams and players, we've seen guys make the jump from AA. I believe that's against COVID protocols this season, and they have to go to AAA for 2 weeks before they can go to MLB. Do I understand that right?
What I understand, and I think again, we reference him all the time. We need to get you on the show just so he can reference himself. But what I heard,
haven't heard the show yet. Evidently, I need to listen to
this. This was a couple episodes ago. He mentioned that there's different protocols. There's different intake protocols between AA and lower, and then AAA has the same as the majors. Okay. So if you go through the protocols of going from AA to AAA, you don't have to then go through the additional protocols to go to the majors. But if you go from AA to the majors, you obviously need to go through those protocols. So it's a way, I think, of seeing more play. We're seeing more in players going to AAA before getting called up this year. And I think that definitely has something to do with it. If you're going to have to go through the protocols anyway, we might as well just have you go to AAA.
Playing while you're
there. Get some experience.
Playing while you're doing it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. So maybe we're not stashing as many AA players this year as we would have in the past. And maybe Bobby Witt is a little further away than we would like to think if Kansas City kind of.
Or I'll get to see him again when I'm in Omaha next weekend.
There you go. There you go.
And I wanted to just toss this in. Perfect time to do, Kevin. I wanted to give you a big shout out. I listened to the podcast with Zach Waxman in November when there was not much content out there. You made the call that Bobby Witt is a lot closer to the majors than anyone realized. And
he's not there yet.
True, but that allowed me to get him in the 40-somethingth round. And the next thing, he's starting to go in the 20-somethingth round come February, March. Right. So the fact that you were able to spotlight that, I'm going to give you a bit of credit there. Maybe he is absolutely nothing and he's just a guy on my draft and hold that I just look at. But the fact that I was able to get him that cheap in November and December, I'm going to give you a shout out for that, Kevin.
Sweet.
Well-deserved, of course. Kevin definitely pushed me onto Bobby Witt as well. If nothing else, he's just fun to roster, even if he's not playing.
Oh my goodness.
And this game is fun. So if you follow MLB Pipeline or any of the bigger Twitter handles that follow prospects and show video and you get to see all the stuff he's doing. Like I rostered Nueve Marte in my dynasty league and I just follow him. And then I follow the Mariners prospect player development page and pipeline. And I usually see his home run 3 times a day scrolling through Twitter. And it's just fun. So it's just fun to roster a guy like that, even if maybe he's not helping your team this year, especially in a redraft.
It's so tricky with some of these dynasty guys. Like for example, I've got Joe Adell and at some points, whenever he was at his hype moments, I could have traded him for almost any player in the MLB. And if I hold him for another 2 years, he might not be worth that much. So determining when to buy and sell these guys at their hype is just unbelievably hard. Let's be honest here as dynasty guys.
Yeah, make sure everybody out there listening is listening to Keep or Cut and then In the Deep, 2 other podcasts on the Pitcherless Podcast Network for deeper both dynasty and just deep league.
Not Lucas, question. Though, because he's in a dynasty league that I'm in.
Yeah, you're on mute, right? Lucas, you didn't hear any of that. Okay, good, perfect. All right, good. All right, I'll give you guys the last shot if there's another player that is worth throwing out there for our listeners. Otherwise, we will move it along. Kevin, last call on anybody worth calling out.
I think I'm good. We've had a lot of good names out there tonight.
All right, Lucas, same thing. Last call for you.
Yeah, I've emptied the clip here, so that's all I've got.
There you go. All right, then, Kevin, I will leave it over to you for your parting words for all of our listeners that have made it through the entire episode so far. What do you got?
Just, I noticed when I was looking at a couple of my 12-team leagues this week, I'm too attached to a couple of names, and there's the players that are performing, especially outfield. We talk about outfield all the time being there's so many more available in Yahoo leagues. They only start 3, you know, in a couple of my 12-team leagues, we only start 4 outfielders. There's tons of outfielders out there. And Bubba from Bubba and the Black Backflip a week and a half or so ago tweeted that he wants to write about the same players every week when he's writing his article. And I've run into that, especially with outfielders when it comes to 12-team leagues. They're rostered in the 15-teamers, but my example was Hunter Renfroe. And when I looked it up, he's in the top 30 amongst qualified outfielders in runs scored, RBIs, even batting average definitely home runs. He's in the top 30 in four of the five categories that most leagues are looking at. So he's definitely a top 30 outfielder. So even three outfielders in a 10-team league, he should be rostered. And he's only 6% rostered at the time on Yahoo. So we're going to 12-team leagues, and some of those leagues have more than three outfielders. My point is there's some players that in shallower leagues we need to start paying more attention to. They're performing better than we think.
That's a good call out. And not be, especially in those shallow leagues, not be worried about your drops as much. Exactly. Not be worried about who you're dropping, because you have guys like Renfro that are readily available, and you can play matchups a lot easier in those shallow matchups. I'm in a guillotine league through Pitcher List, and we started the season with 18 teams. And how it works is if you score the least amount of points each week, your whole roster gets cut, you're out, and your players go into the player pool to be bid on through Fab. And we're down to eight teams now. And you get to a point where you're just like, the player pool is just insane. You went from 18 to eight, and you can't be worried about the dropping a guy because they're underperforming, because there's so many options and you can just play those matchups a lot better. Yeah, I like that call out, Kevin. It happens to me when I write my speed article every week, because I do keep the rule that I have to keep talking about players who are under 20% rostered across Yahoo. And I find myself constantly wanting
looking
to throw
at the same guy.
Yeah, Nico Goodrum is on my thing. And like, of all players, Nico Goodrum, but he's on my list, whether as an honorable mention or a deep dive every week. It's crazy. I try to mix it up as much as I can. All right, there's a player you're thinking about bidding on and you want us to discuss them. Of course, let us know. You can email us at onthewirepod@gmail.com. There's a link in our description. Of course, you can also shoot us a DM over on the Twitter at onthewirepod, or of course by joining PL Plus over at pitcherlist.com, where you get access to the Pitcher List Discord and the advice and banter of over 900 members, including all the incredibly smart staff just wanting to help you win all of your leagues. Of course, I want to once again thank Lucas Beery for joining us on the episode. Lucas, could you remind all of our listeners where they can listen to you or read your work and what you might be working on that they should be keeping a lookout for?
Yeah, feel free to check me out on Twitter at LucasBeery33. I tweet out the waiver wire pods that my boy Lou Landers and I do together. We're more like kind of 15 to 20 minute to maybe 30 minutes at times. We really quickly go through a handful of names. I love your guys' long form show. You really get into the schedules, really get into who to look out for in the beginning. We're more of kind of an express show. Just get in and get out, get you a few names and some info there. But yeah, I do tweet at those links. I've been starting to write up fantasy baseball articles again at fantasysportsdegens.com. That's Casey Bubba's website. I didn't write anything for the first 2 months, and I'm going to be honest with you guys. I haven't told anybody. I feel a little bit bad that I didn't do that, but I just wasn't really comfortable putting out a lot of observations just because I kind of more look at what's happened and determine what's going to go in the future. I don't really do that many recommendations for waiver wire per se, but I did a stock up article. I'm working on a stock down for guys that I view a little bit more negatively, such as Anthony Rendon or Francisco Lindor, what I've seen and all that. So feel free to check that out on my Twitter. At LucasBeery33.
Of course, you can find links to all of that in the show description here for easy access. And definitely check out Lucas's work over there coming up. And then your pod comes out every Saturday. Is that right?
Yeah, we did one on Thursday. We try to go for Saturday typically, though. But yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So make sure you take a listen to him over there as well. That is going to do it for this week's On the Wire. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen, and leaving a rating or review is always appreciated. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80 grade. That's all spelled out. And Kevin is at Hasting Kevin. Keep an eye out for Kevin's Fab preview article every Sunday, as well as my Fab review article titled Waiver Watcher, comes out each week on pitcherlist.com. Of course, you can follow at pitcherlist on the Twitter for announcements of every article that's posted on the site. As we mentioned at the top of the show, we are a proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network, along with 20 other incredible podcasts, including Dugout Study Hall, which dives into the specific stats that you need to know about in a really easy to understand way and breaks that down in a way that you want to be able to listen to it. So keep it. I believe that one comes out on Wednesdays. Keep an eye out for that. And then all the other great pods at Pitcherless Pods on the Twitter to get updates. Every new episode that drops from each of them, and give them all a listen. We wish you the best of luck in all of your leagues and hope you win all of your bids by exactly $1. Thanks once again to Lucas for joining us, and for Kevin Hastings, I am Adam Howe. With that, we bid you good.